Ready to build voice-driven AI products in minutes? Assembly AI is giving Stack Overflow users $50 in free API credits to try their insanely accurate speech AI models. Head to assemblyai.com/stackoverflow to get started. No credit card required.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Stack Overflow podcast, a place to talk all things software and technology. I am Ben Popper, Director of Content here at Stack Overflow, joined today by Vlad Voroninsky, who is the CEO and co-founder of Helm.ai. We're going to be chatting about unsupervised learning, future of AI, and how these things apply, especially in realms like autonomous driving, aviation, and robotics. So Vlad, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Ben.
Why don't you tell folks a little bit about your background? You are an academic as well as an entrepreneur.
Yeah, I actually got interested in computer vision and self-driving cars back in my undergrad days at UCLA. So as part of the UCLA Computer Vision Lab, which was at the time competing in the DARPA Grand Challenges, which more or less kickstarted the autonomous driving space.
Right.
My first kind of real interest in college, I think, was pretty much in that area, specifically in computer vision. But I decided to focus on mathematics for quite some time before coming back to the space. But that was intentional, essentially, because that's kind of the bottleneck that I perceived for AI research. So yeah, I did, you know, spend about 10 years in academia as an academic.
Nice. When I was a journalist at The Verge, I did a deep dive into Velodyne LiDAR, and they had competed at some of the early DARPA challenges. And then Velodyne kind of became state of the art for a lot of self-driving cars. And then I went to work for DJI for a while, which is one of the, you know, preeminent drone companies. And they were kind of at the bleeding edge of deploying things into the world that were getting to the hands of consumers that were autonomously tracking, autonomously obstacle avoiding, you know, doing return to home maneuvers. So I got to be around a lot of that stuff and always thought it was super cool. In my experience back then, the technologies that were important, for example, LiDAR were being compared to other sensors like radar or sonar or cameras. And what DJI was doing relied on edge processing, but none of this related at all to the AI that we're talking about these days, you know, Gen AI, LLMs, the stuff that you're working on, you know, trying to eliminate the gap between a simulation where a car can drive a million miles here and then take that and apply it to reality. Is that machine learning, deep learning, interesting AI, but not Gen AI? Or are you starting to also work with some of the, you know, technologies that we hear so much about in the news?
When we initially started out, this was like now 8 years ago, right? So when we founded Helm, it was still, I guess, the early days for technologies like unsupervised learning. At that point, it was still very much, I would say, an open problem.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw the solution to that problem as being necessary to actually eventually get to L4 autonomous, so fully autonomous driving. And so, you know, I think a lot of our competitors tried to go directly after fully autonomous driving on very aggressive timelines. And, you know, we were not really concerned about that because we did not think those were realistic, but we did see a lot of value in solving certain kind of deep tech frontier research problems like unsupervised learning. So that's what we focused on in the early days. That was motivated by some of the work that I'd been doing in academia, in applied mathematics. And within a couple of years, we made a lot of progress and actually trained, I think, the world's first foundation model for semantic segmentation. So it's basically for any given image, understanding what every pixel means.
Mm.
So it's kind of this very kind of detail-oriented computer vision task. We had a very scalable pipeline for that as far back as, I think, 2018, 2017. And, you know, that's what allowed us to get a lot of interest from the automakers because we were able to demonstrate, you know, higher quality perception technology than some of our competitors, including even big names. So that was the early days. And so I think that, you know, there, I would say the focus was on bringing techniques from applied mathematics or just leveraging more sophisticated mathematical modeling in conjunction with deep learning. And it's a technology that we called deep teaching that we've been developing for many years now. And in the last couple of years, there's been an inflection point in generative AI. Generative AI became part of the zeitgeist, so to say, right, for everyone. And
right.
But, you know, obviously for any AI researcher, I think, you know, generative modeling is something that was already an unknown area. I had actually written papers on generative AI as far back as like, you know, 2018 or so. So it wasn't exactly like a new thing in that sense. But I mean, there were just certain techniques, certain architectures and training techniques that scaled extremely well. So if you couple that with a lot of compute, you get really impressive results. But I think what we've been focusing on for the last couple of years is actually combining a deep teaching technology with generative AI to essentially formulate a much more scalable version of generative AI. And so that's essentially what deep teaching is good at, is sort of, you know, unsupervised learning processes and how to make them a lot more efficient and a lot more scalable. Mm. And that's what allows us to achieve higher levels of realism. So, you know, you mentioned LiDAR, for example. It's an interesting debate about LiDAR over the years, you know, about how does it compare to the other sensors? Is it critical or not?
Right.
You know, so we do believe that LiDAR has certainly a lot of value to add to the autonomous driving stack, but we are kind of a vision first approach. That's because vision has the most information. It's the most information rich sensor. And, you know, one thing that we've done recently that I think demonstrates that well is we trained a foundation model called WorldGen, which basically is able to simulate the entire stack, right? The vision, the camera, the LiDAR, the path of the ego vehicle and physical coordinates, the perception stack, et cetera. But in particular, what it can do is actually, you know, based on existing camera data, it can actually simulate the LiDAR stack. If you can kind of get the LiDAR information from the vision information, I think it's a good example for proving that, you know, vision is more information rich, because it's not going to be possible the other way. You can't really go from the LiDAR information to vision.
So do you have like a ground truth to validate that? Like, right, you have this simulation, you have vision only, and what you're saying is like, just from that raw vision, you can simulate, you know, what the LiDAR would have seen and, you know, therefore show off how powerful vision is and also understand how it performs in simulation. Is there like a ground truth against which you, like, you drive in a car, you record the vision, the radar, the LiDAR, then you take that back, remove the radar, the LiDAR, just give it the vision, have it run through the system and see if it matches the original?
Exactly. No, that's exactly right in terms of the ground truth approach. And now you can directly measure sort of fidelity scores, right, for what you're able to predict there.
That's cool. I'm the kind of person who believes that a really, really well-designed computer system is going to be overall better than human beings who are sometimes drinking or sometimes sleepy or sometimes texting. But, you know, we've seen time and again that when an autonomous vehicle is involved, you know, in an accident, even if it wasn't the autonomous vehicle that started it, another vehicle crashed into somebody, which then got hit by the autonomous vehicle and it didn't slow down fast enough, you know, that immediately creates a political and regulatory clampdown on autonomous driving. All that being said, I guess, how much can you learn in a simulated world? How do you solve for edge cases? And then how do you go out and test that in the real world?
I agree, of course, that autonomous driving has the potential to be much safer than human driving.
Yeah.
Because in a properly engineered AI system is not going to have those kinds of failure modes in terms of distraction or aggressive driving or drunk driving or whatever. But where autonomous driving systems can be limited is just their overall knowledge of the world, right? And being able to handle all those corner case scenarios. So with foundation models like WorldGen and other foundation models we've trained, the idea is exactly to simulate situations from the perspective of the entire stack that are definitely not typical, but are nevertheless realistic.
Right.
You know, in contrast, if you look at sort of the approach of collecting fleet data from some large number of vehicles, even if it's like, you know, Tesla's fleet has like millions of cars, but the rate of occurrence of interesting corner cases kind of has this exponential drop off, right? In the sense that as your system improves, what is considered an interesting case becomes more and more rare by definition.
Right.
So the price you pay for collecting relevant data to improve your system actually increases exponentially as you improve. And that's not a good property to have for this kind of development, right? And so in contrast, if you're able to create simulations that are just as realistic as the real world, essentially having like a virtual fleet instead of a real fleet, you're able to simulate only the interesting cases. So instead of an exponential property, you have like a linear property essentially. And all you need is, you know, compute and the right software. And of course, the big question is, can you close the gap between reality and simulation?
Right.
And with generative AI and all the advances, right, you know, combining deep teaching generative AI, it does seem to be possible.
Yeah, you know, right. The things that capture people's attention the most are an AI that can hold a conversation like a human being, or an AI that can make a photorealistic image, or an AI that can generate video, you know, off the cuff, right? But you see where at least those latter two, right, would be super useful in creating a super high fidelity simulation and closing the gap between, you know, reality and sim. Let me ask, you know, like, how widely deployed is your system? And, you know, to what level of autonomous driving is it being used by auto manufacturers or other players in the space who are trying to move that industry forward?
We work with a number of major automotive companies. I can't speak to the specifics as far as those engagements and, you know, how many vehicles and all that, but we do have a mature product that is production bound. So, you know, we're developing an urban perception system for, you know, surround view cameras. Mm. And in terms of the level of autonomy we're targeting, we definitely decided early on that we would not be a pure play, fully autonomous driving company, because that has a lot of issues, as we've seen from, you know, from what other companies have done, right? Whereas partial autonomy or something like Tesla FSD, as the prototypical example, those kinds of systems, there's a lot of demand for them immediately,
right?
And they can be commercialized immediately.
So makes more sense as a startup to have a super polished and capable and robust level three versus trying to get to level five, right? Like invest in what, you know, an area where the consumer demand is there and it can actually be implemented today. And then sure, you know, maybe over the long term, you know, you're getting to that level five.
Yeah, exactly. Well, one important thing is that the way that we approach autonomous driving is essentially a unified approach across the different levels of autonomy.
Right.
What I mean by that is that there are approaches to, say, partial autonomy that don't scale up to full autonomy, and also vice versa approach. Mm-hmm. I mean, so for example, if you're relying too much on supervised machine learning, if that's the critical thing you're using, it's not going to scale up to fully autonomous driving. And if you're
right.
fully autonomous, if you're relying on LiDAR and HD maps too much, it's not going to scale down to a partial autonomy system. It's going to cost too much. And so what we pursue is a kind of a vision first approach, and also an approach that leverages foundation models with deep teaching and generative AI that allow us to scalably resolve corner cases. And so mm-hmm. for any given production requirement, whether it's L2, L3, or L4, it's just once you define the hardware stack and the operational domain, we're able to build the optimal software solution for that using the same pipeline.
You mentioned Gen AI, and you know, one of the interesting things that I saw, which we haven't really seen come to fruition, but which companies like NVIDIA and, you know, Google showed off, was this idea that when you add an LLM into the robotic stack, there's a new facility in engaging with the world, right? Now you can say, hey, I've got a lot of toys on the table. Can you grab the extinct animal and, you know, bring it to my kid and it picks up the dinosaur? Or the table looks messy. Can you make sure, like, you know, the silverware and the plates, you know, are set up for dinner? And, you know, it goes and does that because it's a multimodal model. So like it understands language and it understands, you know, vision. When you said before semantic analysis, and when you're, you know, you're talking about what your model does it not just see the world and know, okay, when I see something that looks like a bike, this is how I should respond to that, but it also has like an understanding of this is a bike, this is a person, this is a car, this is a stoplight, in the way an LLM might have a understanding of that, quote unquote?
There's kind of a couple of ways to think about it, right? So if you just feed in data that, let's say, contains just video data of the world, and the question is, you know, can you use just video data to learn about the environment? I mean, if you fed enough data into these foundation models, would they learn how to replicate highly realistic behaviors for all the different agents? I think the answer is roughly yes, provided that you had the right data.
Right.
But there's, of course, always going to be situations where the amount of data that you might have about certain situations is not going to be as plentiful as you might like.
Right.
And so I think that bringing in multimodal foundation models, like leveraging text information in conjunction with vision information, makes a ton of sense, because
yeah.
there's going to be certain concepts that are more well represented in that text format that you can then bring into the visual representation and really benefit from that. So yeah, I do think that that is certainly valuable from many perspectives in terms of increasing the accuracy of the simulation, in terms of using it to describe what's actually happening with the driving system, et cetera. So yeah, I think we're going to see more and more of those kinds of foundation models for sure.
That's cool. You know, some of the early folks who were at the cutting edge labs with some of the big tech companies said, mark my words, you know, in 10 years, you know, my kids will not be driving. seems like that won't come to pass. I still have a few years until my kids are teenagers. Maybe I'll get lucky and they won't have to drive. But give me your sense of where we're at now, what you're excited about, and like, you know, what you hope to see in the next year or two in terms of breakthroughs. I think that there's like a dichotomy of both. There are these autonomous taxi systems happening in certain cities where things are really well mapped out and the speeds are low enough. They provide enormous benefit to people, certainly people, you know, with different abilities. Unless you're in one of those cities, autonomous driving has kind of probably fallen to the back of your, you know, your mental radar. It's not in the zeitgeist in the same way. So how do you look at it? Like, have we made progress? Are you excited, you know, for what you see in the year to come? And what's your company going to focus on, for example, to continue to drive, no pun intended, to continue to push things forward?
Yeah, so I do think that there's going to be some exciting developments in the space, for sure, both in terms of, you know, those kind of Waymo type approaches, as well as the Tesla type approaches, right? So from the perspective of given a specific hardware stack, how do we build sort of the optimal software that fits into that for a particular operational domain?
Right.
I think that that problem, there's been quite a lot of progress on that problem. So, you know, that is not necessarily the bottleneck anymore, right? Whereas like, you know, 6 years ago or something in the early days, that was still a big bottleneck, right? Because, you know, supervised learning was the predominant method and just didn't quite even scale into that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that where you're going to see sort of those fully autonomous fleets, I think the challenge there is how to actually, of course, how to make it safe enough, but also how to make it commercially viable, right? Because the cost associated is still far too high in those contexts. What I think is really exciting is that you're going to see many automakers by necessity pursuing an approach that is actually much more heavily leveraging partial autonomous driving as the primary commercialization strategy, similar to Tesla.
Mm-hmm.
That is Tesla's approach ultimately, is they launch an FSD system that is not fully autonomous yet, but they hope to get to a certain point where they can just flip a switch, you know, millions of cars become autonomous simultaneously. That's very powerful.
Right.
So other automakers are not positioned to do exactly the same thing in the sense that they just don't have that fleet.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're years behind in having that kind of fleet. But with the advent of generative AI, they're going to be able to leverage simulation, right?
You know,
partnering with companies like Helm, et cetera, to actually get there much faster, but still pursue that partial autonomy approach, because software is going to be the key differentiator for vehicle sales. One of the key differentiators, you know, in the coming years. So I am excited to see that come to fruition. I think it's going to be a big change for the space, because in the earlier days, there were a lot of false promises about timelines.
Uh-huh.
And
right.
I think it caused certain investments to like really not do well. But I think pretty much the entire autonomous driving industry now understands that that was not the right approach. And they're pivoting toward this kind of a Tesla style approach.
Interesting.
But they're having to leverage these new technologies that are kind of cropping up at a good time.
That's interesting. I guess, let me ask you a question. Like, as other major auto manufacturers deploy more and more semi-autonomous or, you know, autonomous helper features into their cars, are they gathering data from those fleets that they can then use to train with? Like, every time I get out on the road in my car and I turn on lane assist and, you know, follow, and is that data that, you know, is going back to the auto manufacturer and being used to help?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, with any kind of fleet deployment, you want to leverage the data that's being collected, or at least the interesting cases that you collect. But like, that's going to be valuable in proportion to the size of your fleet. And it just takes a long time to get to a certain fleet size. So yeah, I mean, we envision being able to launch systems that are highly competitive with something like Tesla FSD without having those large fleets.
All right, everybody, it is that time of the show. Let's shout out a user who came on Stack Overflow and helped to spread a little curiosity or knowledge. A lifeboat badge awarded to user 3330840 for helping provide a great answer. My commits appear as another user in GitHub. You want to get credit for those commits. This has happened to you. I've got a good answer for the question. Helped over 4,000 people. And congrats again to user 3330840 for your lifeboat badge. I'm Ben Popper. I'm the director of content here at Stack Overflow. Find me on X at Ben Popper. Email us with questions or suggestions for the program, podcast at Stack Overflow. We take listeners on as guests. We talk about things folks suggest. You can always write for the blog. We like fans to participate. And if you liked today's episode, leave a rating and a review. Really helps.
My name is Vlad Vorninsky. I'm the CEO of Helm AI. We're an autonomous driving company pushing the state of the arts with frontier foundation models. Definitely, if you're interested in the space, you know, visit our website. We're always hiring. It's just helm.ai.
All right. If you're listening and you're thinking about getting into the space or working deep learning, check it out. Maybe they get a job for you. Thanks for listening, everybody, and we will talk to you soon.